Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hi, this is Lynn Kerrigan. I'm your host today for the Brown Briefly, and I look forward to leading the team through another terrifying day of the news, salted with a little humor and a little grasping at some ways to stick together and hold up during a crisis. The Brown Briefly was introduced by our former founder, Brian Brown, who used to write for Time Magazine, who was a wonderful embodiment of not only civil discourse, who really tried to set the tone for information and conversation about the variety of issues facing us and the varieties of ways to talk about it, so that we are trying to bridge a terrible polar division in our country and learn to kind of get along a little bit better if we can understand each other and try to find some common ground to move forward. So I'm always grateful to Brian, and happy to be here myself. I'm Lynn Kerrigan, a former social worker and now current writer and musician. And I am working here in the studio with Truman O'Brien, who's our pilot of the airwaves. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, we had a great show this morning.
Yes, you did.
Molly and I, we do the morning scramble right before you guys. And we were, in fact, honoring International Women's Day,
which is coming right up. That's going to be our first topic.
Yeah.
But let me get the brieflies introduced. Also with us via the magic of Zoom is poet Gail Kellner, who I'm going to come back to at the end of the intros to read a little poem to start us out about International Women's Day. Gail, thank you. Gail's a former teacher and author.
Thank you, Lynn. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, good morning. And we have Bruce Holman, who is our guardian of the galaxy, historian, and the man who has the most amazing memory I have ever listened to. That guy has more knowledge about more subjects than anybody I know. So welcome, Bruce.
Good morning, Lynn. It's all trivia, but.
Well, hey, you can be on my team.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
Well, the problem with that is you never know when you need trivia.
That's right. It's all information
for your database.
That's right.
Thank you.
Some people would say it's all trivia.
Well, Buddhists might, yes. I try to stick to that now and then. And also joining us is Kevin Jones, our Clark Kent impersonator, because underneath he runs Indivisible Vachon and lots of other activist programs, and is our sort of resident engineer and kind of brilliant guy from a tech and an activist standpoint. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. We are indivisible and united more and more every day, nationally and globally. It's good to see people come together. Unfortunately, it's in the face of crisis, but you know, we need to deal with what we have in front of us. So good to be here and sharing community with you, everybody.
And breaking news, McDonald's is pulled out of Russia now.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, and Bank of America. Coca-Cola,
we're looking at you now.
Sorry?
Coca-Cola, we're looking at you now.
That's right.
Starbucks. I'm pretty sure Starbucks is everywhere. I wonder if they're there too. That's funny.
Well, it's breaking news every day. We'll run through some local and state issues and leave plenty of time for Ukraine, because there's some interesting things coming up about what's happening, not just the terror, but as you say, the sanctions and the approach to working with Putin. You know, I'd love to hear everybody's comments on. So we'll come back to that. But I want to start with International Women's Day and have Gail start us with that. And then we'll move into just a little bit about what the team's experience has been with really influential women in their lives. So we'll just take a few minutes to settle in to honoring women for once.
Lovely. Well, Lynn, I did quite a lot of, you know, I read a lot of poetry and even broke into a box to find poems from one of my favorites for this topic. And her name is Wenceslawa Szymborska. And she was she's Polish, or was. She passed away a couple of years ago now, in her 80s when she passed. She, I have three poems today from her. I'm just going to read the two right off the top, though, that are about women. And I got to thinking in the process of your question about what defines a woman? What's the difference between men and women? And, you know, when it ultimately comes down to it, it's probably our reproductive instincts as well as physical differences. And so both poems touch on that. The first one talks about a portrait of a woman. And this is kind of, it's called A Portrait of a Woman. And that's an important aspect of the poem, is to hear that title. So this is Wenceslawa. Mind you, she was born in the early 1900s when she wrote this, but some things never change. Portrait of a woman. She must be willing to please, to change so that nothing should change. Naive, yet giving the best advice. Weak, yet lifting the weightiest of burdens. Doesn't know what the screw is for, and will build a bridge.
Yes, oh, that's good. I like that.
That's what I grew up under, that's for sure.
And the other one, the second one from her, and this kind of bridges the International Women's Day and some of the things happening in the world right now with the war going on. So this was written during the Vietnam War. She says, "Woman, what is your name?" "I don't know." "When were you born? Where do you come from?" "I don't know." "Why did you dig a hole in the ground?" "I don't know." "How long have you been hiding here?" "I don't know." "Whose side are you on?" "I don't know." "There's a war on. You must choose." "I don't know." "Does your village still exist?" "I don't know." "Are these your children?" "Yes."
Uh-huh. Good.
Profound.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gail. Well, you know, along that line, I was such a tomboy in the South. I did not fit any of the George Peach criteria that we've talked about some. And so for me, I'm just going to start this and say it was really important to find role models outside of my own family and outside of the mainstream stereotypical societal expectations. And I'll just say that one of the people that I latched onto very early on to watch how she handled herself was Katharine Hepburn, who, the actress who was so independent and so outspoken and yet managed to land Spencer Tracy in some, you know, very unusual relationship. Because he was married to somebody who was hospitalized for mental conditions. And I just liked her style and tried to find that balance between being assertive and being very interesting in how I grew. So that's what I want to say. Truman.
I just want to throw out, I heard a great little pun, I guess you'd call it, where the fellow said, "I knew that my wife was the one when I was working on my car before we got married and asked her if she would hand me a screwdriver. And her response was, 'Straight head Phillips or one with orange juice.'"
There you go.
I knew she was the one. So there you go.
That's great. Well, since you're speaking, Truman, you know, who's on your mind, you know, if you are asked that question?
Well, of course, my mom, you know, I mean, geez. But I told somebody once that our corner, when we moved into town from the farm, well, first of all, when we lived on the farm, my mother could whistle louder than anybody I've ever heard in my life. And she would, you know, do the, where she put her fingers in her mouth.
Thing.
And oh my gosh, it was ear splitting. But anyway, so I was pretty impressed with that right away. But when we moved to the city, we lived on a corner. Our home was on a corner. And it was a big lawn, and all the kids always came to my house. And I would always tell people, they aren't coming to see me or my brothers. They're coming because my mom will take them to, you know, piano lessons. Or she did everything.
Generous.
Except cook. She was a terrible cook. I'm sorry to say. I always said that my two brothers and I were the only guys I know that when we went to the Army, we went, wow, what great food. I'm serious. So anyway, but that was the first one. And then I got to do one more. When I moved to Montana from Texas, I was in the fifth grade. It was the middle of the year. And I was put in this classroom. All the, you know, this is when they had all the desks bolted to the floor. And all of the seats were full. So they brought in another desk that was on a little skid thing. Mm-hmm. And I was over on the corner by the coat rack. And I talked funny because I was from West Texas. I'd say oil instead of oil, you know. And anyway, and Mrs. Vinge, or Ms. Vinge, she was absolutely the dragon lady of the whole elementary. But she liked me because I would say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. And all
manners.
The kids, yes, and all the kids told me, when you buy a ruler, get a plastic one. Don't get one of those wood ones. And I said, why? Well, because if you screw up, she would get you up in front of the class and whack your knuckles with your own ruler. And if you got a plastic one, it'll break. But if you got one of those wood ones, man, that would hurt. So anyway, that's my story.
Thank you. Kevin, will you go?
So I worked at as an engineer at the Boeing Company for 35 or so years, and one of the things that really impressed me was, you know, this is a very male-dominated business at that time, and still I'm sure today is, but the women who worked there, who were colleagues, and brought their, you know, skills and brilliance and insight and everything else that everybody else brought to the table, and just the recognition that their road had been so much more challenging. Mm-hmm. Their road of, you know, being a minority throughout their entire, you know, college career, being a minority every, you know, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week or more as they, you know, worked amongst a bunch of men. It was really exemplified by the first job that I had. I was located in an area with a business development team at the Kent Space Center. And the business development team was pretty much, pardon me, Truman, a lot of retired military folks. Usually, you know, retired lieutenant colonels from the Air Force and Army and Navy and Admiral and, you know, so on and so on. And they were all 30 years older than me at the time when I started, when I was like 23 or 24. And their attitude was different than mine and even more challenging for women in that workspace. So I just a shout out to women who advance, bring their skills and talents to advance the roles of women in industry and tech work. And really the equality that's long overdue. And so I'm glad to see we're making progress. It's never fast enough. It's never going to be complete. But progress is warranted. And it's great to see.
Thanks, Kevin. Good point. Gail, would you go? And then I'll come to Bruce.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in a woman-dominated household. And I was raised by my mother and grandmother. My father died when I was just a baby in arms, and she was pregnant with my little sister. And I had a three-year-old older sister. So we were unfamiliar with men, honestly, in a funny way. We're very insular. And so the first 10 years of my life in particular, and it definitely shaped my It definitely shaped me. I mean, I brought up I assumed women made the decisions. I assumed women did the work. I assumed women were capable and competent of everything because we did it all. It never occurred to me that I wasn't really terribly aware of the world outside. So shout out to my mother and my grandmother for all they offered. And the other woman in the last few years has been Hillary Clinton, you know, honestly. And I know a lot of people like to step away from someone when they are not no longer popular or they've lost an election. There's a funny human reaction to that. But man, I want to stand right by her. I want to stand right beside her. I am so proud of her. And I think what she could, what she has done in her life, coming as close as she did to electing, being elected as a first woman president, honestly, had it been a fair fight, she would have been. And I wonder where we'd be today, or if we would even be in the situation we are today, because one of the reasons she wasn't elected was because of Putin. Interest in it. He realized that she was a strong leader, and he wasn't going to be able to have his way in the world in the same way that he had when old number 45 got in. So anyway, shout out to Hillary Clinton. I think she's amazing, and I absolutely am behind her. Will be always.
Thank you. Great point. Bruce, let's go, and then I'll let me have you go. Okay, and Truman has a comment, and we'll move on through the agendas. Bruce, but go ahead.
Sure. Well, like everybody, my mother and my sister really were just huge influences on me understanding, the nature of what women confront in American society. And, American society has pluses and minuses. We're way ahead of a lot of countries, but way behind others. It's just the nature of social development. But I think the key thing for me, all along in my life, I've had very strong women leaders to work with, either working with or as teachers in school, as fellow students. But really, as I started teaching film history, and once I got into teaching film history and did my dissertation on film, it really struck me, how powerful male privilege and the male gaze is in every society, and particularly in American society and in American movies, and just sort of the mountainous sort of terrain that women need to navigate in American society. And so it really opened my eyes in lots and lots of ways. And, I'm of a generation where we all have lots of work to do and we all have a long way to go. But at the same time, that fundamental recognition of the differentials, the microaggressions, the kinds of things that women confront in our society, it's just a real mind opener. And once you're aware of it, you never see the world in the same way.
Thank you, Bruce. You're always so good at framing things. Truman.
Yeah, I just had a quick comment. Kevin reminded me. When I got to Alaska Airlines, I had been a captain in two different organizations before. But when I upgraded to a first officer, I was in the 727, which is a three-person crew. And the absolute best captain that I flew with was a woman named Christy Gomez. Christy was not only an excellent pilot, but she ran her crew. I mean, you always knew where you were with Christy. You knew she was a mentor and a teacher as well as a boss. But anyway, thank you for reminding me of that, Kevin. She was amazing.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there.
That's great. Well, the thing that I want to sort of end with about this topic, and then segue into a little bit about the Supreme Court nominee, Ketanji Brown Jackson, is just to say you can find more information on internationalwomensday.org. And you all have brought up much of the topics that the information on Women's Day has brought up, which is their basic goals are to celebrate women's achievements, raise awareness about women's equality and inequalities, lobby for gender parity, and fundraise for female-focused charities. They are this year really going after more gender equity and against violence against women. And Truman, that really links into your previous show where previously it's been reported that as many as one out of four women have been sexually assaulted in one way or another. And there's a big recognition right now about what's happening about missing and indigenous women. missing Indigenous women. And I think that, you know, this all still goes on in the U.S. Women are trafficked. And these kinds of organizations celebrate not just these issues, but try to really realize that we have come a long way and we're still going. This International Women's Day started in 1911, and women did not get the vote till 1920. So it's really important to know that organizations like this that do activism really can make a difference, because we have gotten the vote, to many males' chagrin, but there we go. And to segue, I just, you know, am thinking a lot about the Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson, that's her last name, and the qualities that you think Biden chose her for. I don't know if you've had a chance to kind of look her up very much, and I have some information on her if you need that before you can reply. Let me know what you think.
Gail. Well, I'm happy to start out, and just because it is such a natural segue from our conversation about women in general. You know, she's a working mother. And right there, that just tells me she's got grit, she's got resilience, and she has a work ethic like I'd say like none other, but like many, many other working women. I don't know that unless you've experienced it, you really can fully appreciate what it means to, I don't know that she's a single mother, but many working women are single mothers. But what that takes, whether you're in a relationship or not, what it takes to hold down a full-time job, and in her case, what a professional job she has and demanding job, and also meet the needs of children. And women, for the most part, are always doing doing that. And so anyway, shout out to her for that. And I think that that's going to bring a certain perspective to the court, along with her her life as a Black woman, as a woman, but also as a mother. I think those things for me make her qualified right there.
Thank you. Anybody else want to chip into this?
I just looked up International Women's Day. It's kind of interesting. It was started by the Socialist Party of America and from the organization of from the garment workers in New York, and they were trying to unionize, and that was the start. But I thought that was an interesting start to where it's gone today.
Yeah, and now here we are, where we have tried to increase the representation on the Supreme Court and better balance it, not only from a conservative and liberal standpoint, but from an age standpoint. She's 51. She is being nominated as a Black woman in the era of intense scrutiny about the Black Lives Movement and the place of society and correcting some of the discrimination and oppression against Black people. And I think she'll be a really valuable voice. She's been a litigator. She's been a judge only since 2021 was when she was appointed to her federal judge of the, what is it, the I'm sorry, she's been an attorney for the federal judge, Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And so I think she knows people and people know her, and that will be valuable. Kevin.
Yeah, I was just going to add, Lynn, you know, as much as we like to think we can walk in other people's shoes, we really can't do full justice to that. And it's hard to know exactly what insights, what that she will bring to the court. I'm confident that she will be appointed. So I think, you know, again, you know, it's about time. Reflecting my earlier comments, I think that reflecting the community in the court is super important. I just wish we had the opportunity to appoint more folks to the Supreme Court in this administration.
It's going to be fascinating to watch the process of her approval and her nomination, and sort of the process that goes through in the Senate. It's really a test point, if you will. If you look at Amy Coney Barrett, who is about the same age, similar sort of backgrounds in law school and sort of professional kinds of stuff, you know, both have families, you know, and just watch how differently the Senate deals with these two candidates will give you some insights into the nature of how race impacts politics in the United States. So it's going to be a very interesting few weeks, month, whatever it takes to get her through the nomination process. But in the meantime, watch carefully and go back and review the kinds of things that happened with Barrett when she went through this process. And it will enlighten you in ways that you cannot imagine.
Thank you for that excellent insight, and kind of, you know, backing up a little bit and trying to link all these dots, connecting the dots, I think is really important. So thanks.
Can I ask one quick follow-up to Bruce? Bruce, yeah. Can you give us a little foreshadow for us a little bit what we may see in the difference in the way that Barrett was treated from the way that Jackson will likely be treated?
Well, it's a little difficult to know until you get into it. And, you know,
what do you anticipate? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I anticipate some of the things like, I mean, Barrett was sort of positioned as a super mom, you know, doing everything, you know, large family, you know, homebound, not homebound, but very dedicated to home and family and those kinds of things. It's going to be interesting to see how the new nominee is attacked by the conservative elements who don't agree with her politics in terms of, I mean, she's got a similar kind of family background. She's raised kids. She's, you know, she's been an exemplary professional career. I mean, the two match up, you know, line for line. And it's going to be interesting to see how people attack the new nominee versus the old nominee. And that's what's going to be interesting to me.
Yes.
And I think it's just going to focus on things that are not relevant to the kinds of questions that were asked to Barrett. Those same kind of questions are not going to be asked the new nominee.
Thank you. Really good point. And the media, the way the media portrays people is also very different. So thank you, Bruce, for that insight. I want to move us all along a little bit and just ask a couple of questions about local openings and happenings and kind of what you guys have noticed around locally. I'm going to try to keep this sort of short so that we can move on to some other really pressing issues, I think. But for me, I went to see Bruce Ferries at Vashon Center for the Art, and what a fabulous jazz bassist on Saturday. That was great. And I went to one of the First Friday exhibits at Cafe Vino Olio and saw some of my friend Ann Lita Shapiro's energy paintings during the time of COVID. It's very evocative. So I've had a good time this week, other than being sent to bed over the fear of, you know, Russian domination of the world. So have to find the good things, the local things we can anchor onto to keep us sane. What about anybody else on the Vashon end of what's going on here and your reactions?
Well, there's a really fascinating mini exhibit, the museum that we've done with the Vashon Audubon.
Oh, yeah.
We've built a what I call a grotto, kind of a sound grotto in the middle of the museum, in which you can watch just incredible photographs, over 30 island photographers, photographs of birds. And Sarah Driggs, who put it together, who's part of Audubon, has these incredible photographs. And then you hear the bird sounds, you hear the bird song, and then the name of the bird comes up and where the photograph was taken on Vashon. So it's really just, if you're interested in birds and if you're interested in the diversity of birds on Vashon, I really encourage you to pop into the museum sometime. It's going to be up for a couple months up until late April. And just as a really fine introduction into Vashon birds.
Thank you. You guys are so creative. It blows my mind. Kevin.
Yeah, I'm just letting everybody know it's time to fasten your seatbelts, because what's coming up here 2022 Haiku Festival at Mukai Farm and Garden on third annual March, bringing the beauty of haiku Japanese poetry to Vashon Island residents once again. Truman sharpening the pencils.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Caps.
Entry deadline is, no kidding, April 1st. And on April 10th, contest winners will be announced. And of course, you'll be able to tour the farm and see those haikus distributed throughout the farm and the gardens.
Thanks, Kevin. What do you know about how to submit or find out more information about all of that? You said there was a deadline, assuming that's an application and or a submission of your poetry.
It would be go to online mukaifarmandgarden.org/haiku-2022. And just go to Mukai Farm and Gardens, and I'm sure
you'll
be able to find the link.
Yeah, and what you want to do is, I've already submitted mine.
All right. Woohoo.
What you want to do is make sure you have them written ahead of time, because they have a block where you can either type or paste in the haikus that you've written. You can submit up to three. They have a series of, I think, five categories, heritage, social justice, people's award, young people, they have a young person's kind of award. So like five or six categories, you can check off which categories you want to enter in. But yeah, it's a kick, and it's well worth doing.
It's quite beautiful, too. It's outside. Oh, yeah. You know, posted all outside, and you will roam around those beautiful gardens. It's lovely. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, the other thing is Mike Feinstein is now curating the highway haiku. If you have a highway haiku that you think is appropriate for people rushing to the ferry to sort of slow themselves down and reflect on the larger meanings of life, write a haiku and send it to Mike Feinstein.
Feinstein, with an E-I or an I? Or?
I'd have to look.
Okay. Well, we can look that up while we're talking.
I was at the ferry terminal just this last week picking someone up, and was so pleased to see the highway haikus still up. Made me think of Kai Wynn Berry, of course, who passed this year. She was a local woman who, on International Women's Day, it's nice to think of our local women notaries as well. So not notaries of public, but those two, but notable women on the island. Yeah. She certainly fell in that category.
Truman.
Yeah, I just got a text from my wife who reminded me, we're talking about International Women's Day. NOVA had a special recently called A Picture of a Scientist. And if you have a chance to see it, I highly, highly recommend it. I'm just going to read a quick blurb on the NOVA website. It says, women make up less than a quarter of the STEM professionals in the United States, and a number even lower for women of color. But there's a growing group of researchers who are writing a new chapter for women scientists, exposing longstanding discrimination and leading the way in making science more inclusive. A biologist, a chemist, and a geologist lead viewers on a journey through their own experiences in the sciences, ranging from outright harassment to years of subtle slights, along the way, from cramped laboratories to spectacular field stations. Scientific visionaries, including social scientists, neuroscientists, psychologists, provide a new perspective on the new science itself. More diversity, equitable, and open to all. Anyway, it's very, very good. I highly recommend it.
Thank you. Well, let me spin through just a couple of quick state questions for you, and then I want to hit some national things around the investigations on the former president and certainly on Ukraine. And so this section will be kind of short. If you'll help me with that. One, I want to give a shout out to Derek Kelmer, who is one of the Democratic representatives in the U.S. Congress from Gig Harbor, who has co-sponsored a collaborative and bipartisan Civic Bridges Act to help fund nonprofits, cultural and religious organizations, and public institutions to find ways to improve civic culture. And one of the ways they plan to do that is through establishing a new office of civic bridge building within the National and Community Service Corps by setting some grants out. And this model was from the YMCA of Pierce and Kitsap County's Bridge of Hope. And so they're really emphasizing some of the civics lessons we've gotten from these last few years and ways to talk together. And the thing that I liked about learning about this is that their goal wasn't to force ourselves to compromise, but to help people stay in hard conversations and not to be toxic or demonize people when we're talking with different views. So I think their goals are good. It'll be interesting to see how it starts. They are starting off with this grant program to get it going for other organizations to help carry out and establish some criteria. I'd love to see something like that here, you know, in operations. And I just wondered if y'all had any opinions about that, if you've had a chance to learn any more about it, or kind of what you think about this kind of broad educational approach.
Well, I will just add in real briefly. I think it's critical that we find ways to talk to one another. And so big shout out to organizations doing that across the board. So absolutely. And there's also a wonderful book that's come out called Saving Us by Catherine Hayhoe. And she talks about how to have these difficult conversations also with people who may have different opinions. So it's called Saving Us, Catherine Hayhoe.
Thank you, Gail.
There was also a very interesting article, and I can't remember where I read it, just in the last few days, but a student writing about going off to college and being very sort of eager for the debates that would happen in college classrooms. A young woman, and she said what she confronted was self-censorship, that people were afraid to talk mm-hmm. about their beliefs and mm-hmm. talk about their opinions mm-hmm. and enter into those debates. And I think we're all of an age where, yeah, we had some knockdown, drag-out kind of debates.
Yeah, we did.
In college classrooms. And, you know, even more recently, up until the last 5 or 10 years, I mean, that's one of the joys of talking to people, is that sort of, you know, grinding of ideas together. And I'm afraid what's happened in this contentious kind of fragmented world and divided world we're in is people are self-censoring themselves.
Yeah.
Too much. And at some point, you know, at what point do you really create the atmosphere and the environment in which those kind of hard conversations can take place? And we need that. And so I applaud all of these efforts to create a mechanism for people to sort of talk unfettered about their beliefs and opinions.
Yeah, sometimes that needs really good frameworks and moderation. And I would refer everybody to the IDEA program, which is what it's called, at the UW School of Social Work, where it's the framework around dialogue that I've talked a lot before about, making very clear that the goal is not to convince or to judge, but to listen and to understand as a beginning, and to stop this warfare about everything. We need to listen a little bit more. There's also, just real quickly, a couple of other good things that have happened in the state. We've passed a law limiting gun magazine capacity on automatic rifles. We've also passed an anti-hazing law called Sam's Law that is asking universities to report all incidents of hazing, make that transparent, and to do education in universities about bullying in schools, because it leads to death. So there are good things happening. We just have to pay attention to it. There's so much on fire right now, including, you know, a couple of the national things I want to talk about. Real quickly, it sounds like the House Select Committee is starting to prosecute people. And I just got a text from CNN earlier that the first people going on trial for their errors during January 6th from that January 6th committee was found guilty. So that's one of the first people not just charged, but found guilty of breaking laws and breaking and entering and, you know, trying to overcome a lot of our protections in the Capitol and all of that. So it looks like to me where we're getting stuck is in some other investigations that they've proved that, you know, Trump had knowingly understood that a lot of the attempts to overturn the electoral count were knowingly fraudulent. The investigation committee of the January 6th Select House committee has found a lot of evidence that he really did know what he was doing. And yet the Manhattan investigation is sort of stalling because they don't feel like they can prove harm was done when Trump may have inflated his property valuations. And so they said that the banks actually made money off of his projects, and so they don't really see harm. And I was interested that ethics weren't really sort of brought up in that. You have to find a particular law to nail somebody on and then have the political will and courage to go on into prosecution. And I just wonder if anybody had thoughts about that. Gail?
Well, just one, and that's that two of the prosecutors, district attorneys, resigned over that decision.
Exactly.
Because they were, as I truly appreciate, appalled that he wouldn't be held accountable. So.
Yeah. Anybody else with any knowledge or questions or comments on that?
We'll see how the civil case proceeds, because that's still active, is my understanding. But disappointing as well.
Well, and it's also a commentary on the nature of prosecutors and whether they be federal prosecutors or state and local prosecutors, how much discretion they really have. And all you have to do is watch a very interesting series called Billions, which about the conflict between a billionaire and originally a district attorney and then later an attorney general of the state, to get a sense of how much politics enters into those decisions. And it's, even though the wheels of justice do grind slowly, sometimes they stop, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah. We've got about 3 minutes left, and I do want to turn to the invasion of Ukraine, because for me that has been sort of overpowering my brain. And I have been sort of surprised that there is so much bombing of civilians, and assuming there's a Geneva Convention rule against that kind of siege mentality, and not just fighting a war with another army, but just bombing civilians to kill them off and make them surrender. And, the other issue for me is sanctions that are going quickly forward, and there's now new debate about banning oil purchases from Russia. The Congress is working on that right now, as well as, people worried about the fallout from what will happen if there is a nuclear explosion from them shelling and taking over atomic weapons. And, there's just so much going on that it makes me wonder, kind of where we can best educate ourselves and talk to people about how to survive this sort of, assault. Truman.
Just wanted to point out one quick thing. Several news reports have been talking about shelling this nuclear power plant.
Right.
It really wasn't shelled. It was, there was light arms fires, really all it was. And I think they were using it just to intimidate the workers so that they could take it over. I think if they were intended to blow it up, they would have blown it up.
Yeah, and you're right. The facility that was attacked was the training building next to the actual reactor. But still, that's not good.
No, it's not.
And they've taken over another atomic lab.
They show this thing coming down, and like, it's, oh my gosh, it was a rocket fire.
It's good to know. Thanks.
Kevin, you were going? Go ahead.
That was me muttering. No. Go ahead, Gail.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't think the United States can act too quickly to stop importing oil from Russia. That seems like one of the most obvious and things that I can't believe we haven't already done. So, and good boon for alternative energy as well, because I, you know, a lot of people don't like to see the oil prices rise. For me, it's like that brings down the cost of renewable energy sources, or it makes them more competitive in cost. So all good reasons to stop importing oil from Russia, as far as I can see.
Well, we'll be continuing this conversation. On behalf of the Brown Briefly, Kevin, Bruce, Gail, Truman, and me, Lynn Kerrigan, I want to thank you for listening and hope you tune in to these ongoing conversations. This is sort of right on the ground, but I want to have Truman end with a little bit of my thoughts.